Three messages before we get started. If you're a tech entrepreneur, don't you have unique legal needs that the average lawyer can't help you with? That's why you need Scott Edward Walker of Walker Corporate Law. If you read his articles on VentureBeat, you know that he can help you with issues like raising money or issuing stock options or even deciding whether to form a corporation. Scott Edward Walker is the entrepreneur's lawyer. See him at walkercorporatelaw.com. And do you remember when I interviewed Sarah Sutton Fell about how thousands of people pay for her job site? Look at the biggest point that she made. She said that she has a phone number on every page of her site because, and here's a stat, 95% of the people who call end up buying. Most people, though, don't call her, but seeing a real number increases their confidence in her and they buy. So try this. Go to grasshopper.com and get a phone number that will make your company sound professional. Add it to your site and see what happens. Grasshopper.com. And remember Patrick Buckley, who I interviewed? He came up with an idea for an iPad case. He built a store to sell it, and in a few months, he generated about $1 million in sales. Well, the platform he used is Shopify. If you have an idea to sell anything, set up your store on Shopify.com because Shopify stores are designed to increase sales. Plus, Shopify makes it easy to set up a beautiful store and manage it. Shopify.com. Here's the program. Hey there, freedom fighters. My name is Andrew Warner, and I am the founder of Mixergy, home of the ambitious upstart. And today's guest came up with an innovative business idea, but you won't believe how much revenue this company is generating. David Greenbrown is the founder of Travel Parking Group. It lets you, well, it's got two parts of the business. One part lets you compare prices and amenities at airport parking options in the UK, so you can find the one that's got the lowest price or the best amenities, etc., and book it right on his site. The other part of Dave's business is, well, they'll send chauffeurs out to meet you when you arrive at the airport. The chauffeur will take your car, go park it in a safe parking lot, and then when you arrive back, when you return from your trip, chauffeur will come with your car, drop it off, and let you take your car and drive off. Dave, great business idea, and welcome to Mixergy.
Hi, Jules. Mate, all right?
Yeah. We had trouble with your computer, so now we're on iPhone, which the audience recommended that I try if we ever had issues with computers. So thanks for grabbing it and doing this interview that way.
Let's give it a whirl, eh?
How much revenue is Travel Parking Group generating right now?
We're going to do 10 million quid this year, we reckon, give or take. Obviously, it's not quite at the end of the year yet, but should be around that. There's not a lot of profit in that, I have to add very quickly.
What kind of profits do you guys see?
Yeah, well, that's a trade secret at the moment. I can't divulge that information.
Why are the margins so thin? Why is it that there's 10 million quid, which basically is 10 million British pounds? Why don't you get to keep a lot of that?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously on one side of the business, we only earn a commission. We're holding a lot of cash for our suppliers. Obviously, on the looking for parking side of things, we sell the parking on behalf of the car parks, and we keep that cash and give it to them. We're the agent, so we only earn a commission on it. It's very much a volume driven business, mm-hmm. So we earn a commission on each order, and then we obviously then give the proportion of it, the much greater proportion of it to the company that actually parked the cars. But on the stress-free side of things, which is the operational company, the chauffeur company, then we're it's reversed. But there's much lower volume on that side of the business.
I see. So, lower volume, but the chauffeur part of the business you guys own. You don't have to split the revenue with anyone else. You just need to make sure that there's a chauffeur there ready to take the car when people arrive.
Well, it's reverse of the other one. We obviously have to pay a commission to an agent then for them to supply us the orders. Mm. So one of the businesses is an agent for the other business. That's the model really, and it's an interesting one because everybody in the industry is selling for everybody else, which is fantastic. I've not worked in that many different industries, but it seems like the ones that I've worked in, I've never seen that before. Everyone's got deals with everybody else, which is really good.
And the idea came to you when you and your co-founder, Martin Mansell, sat down and, well, you tell me, what was the process that you guys went through that helped you come up with this idea?
Well, you know, I'd love to say we had a brainwave and we searched the internet and came up with a fantastic, unique idea. But the reality is that it was trial and error, really. You know, I've been trying to come up with a sort of product-based internet business for most of my career, really, because my background's in making websites. I've been making them since 1995. And I've worked for a lot of agencies. I've had my own digital agency, but I never really enjoyed the client work for, you know, I never really, you know, I always wanted to do it my own way. And I tried to set up a number of internet companies unsuccessfully. And this one came along, this opportunity came along through Martin, really, because it was his sort of, concept. I mean, we talked about a number of concepts to work on together. But I could always produce the websites, and he's got the commercial know-how, and that's how the partnership works. So we discussed it, and we thought, well, actually, this one's working here. We can see this company's doing well. We're doing it well.
You saw a competitor who was doing it well, and you said, hey, if it's working for them, we can do it too.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that's pretty much as I remember the discussion. I mean, it's hard to remember every conversation you have, isn't it? But as I remember that, you know, that's pretty much how it came about. Really, we thought, well, actually, you know, that's something that could work pretty well if we can do it well. So I mean, it's not a unique idea. There's loads of people doing it, and even in the US, there's a lot of people doing it as well.
So if there's so many people who are doing it, and I didn't recognize how many people were doing it, but if there are so many, How do you compete? What do you guys do that's so different?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a conversation we have all the time, and it comes down to two things, really. You first, you need commercial know-how in terms of putting the deals in place with the car parts to make sure that to make sure that we identify the right car parts that are going to sell, they're going to provide a good service level, and that we have the contracts in place with them that are going to sort of protect us against any losses that we might have. And secondly, it's a website. It's making a website that converts.
I see. Making a website that converts, having some contracts, and we're going to get more of the details as we hear your story, including the shocking thing that happened with your wife. But I want to get a little bit into the story and maybe build some rapport with you before we get into it, because it's tough to just launch into a conversation about what happened with your wife. But first, this business, one of the first businesses, I'm okay to talk about that, right?
It's not really that shocking, though.
It's shocking when I read it. But plus, I've got to promote the interview. We need people to keep listening, even though we're talking on an iPhone here. We want people to stick around. But why don't we start off?
We'll see. Well, obviously, people can judge how shocking it is later on. I don't consider it to be too shocking, but let's see.
All right, we'll find out we'll find out what people say in the comments. Tell us, guys. Starting off, though, you said that you're a guy who's been trying to build a successful internet company for years. The first one that you were involved with, was it newsplayer.com?
Yeah, that's right. That's a company that I worked for when I was sort of cutting my teeth, really, with web development. And they were in the UK. They were one of the original .com companies. They went and got a load of funding from venture capitalists back in the late 90s.
How much is a lot of funding that they got? Do you remember?
It was 12 million quid at the time.
Okay.
So I mean, it's a fair old chunk of money to get.
And what was their business, Dave? What were they doing?
It was video internet streaming. So distribution of video over the web, and it was through ITN, and they got a license to distribute all ITN's news content online, and it was a 20-year license. And we basically bought a shed load of high-powered digitization computers, and digitized all of it. We never got through it all, because by the time we got, you know, the business model was failing. By the time we'd done a lot of it,
and it failed because it was way ahead of its time. Online video wasn't ready back when the internet was on dial-up, right?
No, it wasn't, was it? I mean, maybe we all don't remember, but those of us who do remember, I mean, it wasn't really a great experience, was it? Video initially on the internet, it was only the advent of broadband that brought video to the forefront of sort of, you know.
And that company pivoted into something else. What did they switch to doing?
Well, the company now is completely different. I've still got an interest in it, actually. It supplies the bet. Do you know when you go into a betting shop, If you go, I've never been to a betting shop,
but
yeah, and there are, and you've got all the TVs above.
Yep.
That's what they merged.
Okay.
So it's a stream. They turned it into the streaming of all the race stuff. I'm not sure whether they supply it in the US or not, but they own a large percentage of the company that does all that stuff in the UK. And that's what it turned into. So I mean, which was a fantastic piece of opportunism, really, from their perspective. I mean, they saw that it was failing. They just switched models. But I have to say, they blew a load of money to start with. They spent a lot on trying to make something work that didn't ultimately work. But then managed to sort of pull it out of the fire, so to speak.
All right. Well, they're still alive. That's impressive, considering when they launched and what they launched with. And so soon after you left there, you started your own digital agency.
That's right.
Right. What were you doing?
Just, you know, you bog standard portfolio websites for, you know, Joe Bloggs is a carpet factory, or Jimmy Jones is motor mechanic shop.
And you're doing websites for these mechanic shops and factories.
That's right. Yeah. Sort of 10 page portfolio websites that you see so often. Everybody needs a website nowadays, don't they? So yeah. we were one of these web development agencies, small time web development agencies that made these websites for people. And occasionally we got sort of a decent side job to do, 30, 40, 50 pager. Or it might have been a 10 grand job, but we made so many of them. We must have made 200, 300 of those websites over the course of the years what we did it through.
What's a typical price for a website that you guys built?
We were looking about a grand, really.
Okay. And what did you hate about it? You didn't love that job.
No, rubbish. Yeah, rubbish. I say that, and I regret saying it immediately, to be honest. I mean, I didn't hate it. I mean, I love projects. I love working. I love making websites. I love the internet. So I mean, I did enjoy it, but I felt as though the websites that I'd been making for the agencies that I'd worked for were far better than the ones that I was making, far more functional, could do far more than the ones that I was making for,
I see. You hated it, you just felt under-challenged by it.
A little bit, yeah. It's quite easy to do, and they were so templated, and the lad who I did it with, one of the lads that did it with Dan, and he's now a shareholder in the travel parking company, mine a shareholder, and he still does all the designs, and we talk back about it all the time, and he did all the designs, and we just churned them out. The template size, we churned them out. But the problem that we had with it was that we tried to build them all on a custom CMS, right? That I developed myself, that I brought with me through the years. We tried to develop them all on that same content management system, it's interesting because I regret doing that now. We should have never done that. If I was going to start a digital agency again, I'd never go down that route where I would try and develop my own software. However, the system that the parking runs on, right, is basically the later versions of that same software that we built the CMS. So if I hadn't spent all that time on the CMS system that never worked, that cost us so much time and money that we spent so long working on constantly to put these portfolio websites on, we would have never had the system that we have now.
So you didn't build on WordPress. You built on your own content management system, and you're saying, yeah, that had its downside, which meant that there wasn't a big enough audience for this content management system, and you were competing with newer systems that were more open, but. Yeah. The upside was when it was time for you to build your new company, you were building on your own platform that was built just the way you wanted and that you had tons of experience in.
Exactly, and we could, and I always knew that you could do more than make. I mean, the foundations to it were extensive, and I always knew that it could do more than just make websites. And I was always looking for the sort of the angle to sort of exploit it, really. And those were the businesses were that we tried to set up.
Tell me about some of these businesses. So throughout, while you're running this digital agency, you're thinking, I could come up with my own product. I can come up with a business that's standalone. We're not doing client work. What are some of the products that you tried launching that you actually built?
Yeah, so we tried to do the CMS twice. We're called Slugger, and then we tried to do it called WAMS. Then we tried to put which were two failed CMS programs that we sort of, in our naivety of what it takes to develop a platform, we thought we could be the next WordPress, or we thought we could be the next Site Infinity or something like that. And you know, obviously, when you learn more business and you learn more about what's actually involved in those companies, you realize that you're sort of fighting a losing battle to a certain degree, and you need to find an angle. So that way of finding an angle, we tried to set up we used to build websites for people, and if it was a good idea, we used to do them for free but take a share in the company, right? And you know, that caused a lot of problems financially, but it allowed us to build these business ideas and contribute to them, and sort of build relationships with the founders of those companies, and try and make it, as it were, in inverted commas. And one of them was a company called Find a Monkey, who are actually still going now, and they're a people finding agency. And that's still on, and that side.
There's a people finding agency. This is basically a headhunting firm called Find the Monkey.
It's not. Yeah, that's right. Well, it's find a monkey. So FINDER. But it's not people finding agency. It's debtor tracing. So if you've got a long lost brother, you need to find him.
Finder monkey.
Yeah, find a monkey. Yeah.
Ah, I see. Okay, so they're the finders. They're the monkeys who are going to find your data.
That's right. Yeah.
Gotcha. I see. Okay. And so you still do work for them. Why do you still do work for them? You guys are turning over 10 million quid a year.
Well, we commit. Well, we, you know, it's a question that we're working through with them now, because we're trying to service their requirements still. And you know, I've got shares, and we've got an interest in the company, but we're not really able to do it because the big focus has got to be on the parking. I just watched one of the previous interviews, and you it was a question you answered yourself. It's hard to say no sometimes, isn't it? You get stuck in it. You make commitments to people, and their businesses are running in your system, and they're running on your capabilities, and you can't just take that away from them. You don't want to either, because you've invested a lot of time in your life to it yourself, haven't you? And it's very difficult. But I mean, it could have taken off like the parking has done, couldn't it? It could have been the one that took off, and it may still do, of course. I mean, the guys running it are very determined lads. But it's not quite done it for them yet. But you know, it's a great concept.
Got it. I see here. Locate ex-tenants. We find them discreetly, and other find. They just find stuff for you.
That's right. They find people. Yeah, they find people. And then another one. I mean, it's a great business. That, I mean, I don't know how scalable it is to other countries, because we've got in the UK. There's all sorts of tracing databases that you can tap into, and license and use, and that's what the model is. But I don't know how scalable it is abroad. And then several other ones. I mean, we set up a company called WeScope, which was going to be the Facebook of star signs.
So the Facebook of staff what?
Star signs.
Staff signs.
Star signs. Everyone's got a star sign, aren't they? Whether you're a Cancer or a Sagittarius.
So if I'm Sagittarius, I might connect with other people who are Sagittariuses, etc. The way that if I was in Harvard a few years ago, I might want to connect with other Harvard students, and Facebook facilitated that. So let me ask you something. You're a guy who listens to Mixergy interviews. You hear about people who build successful companies, and here you are trying really hard, and it's not popping. Things are going okay. You're making a living, but it's not popping. How do you feel about yourself at that point? I know how I feel about myself when that happens. What about you?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not great, is it?
to be honest. Do you start to question yourself? Do you start to say, what's wrong with me? Because all these guys seem to have it so easy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you know that they don't have it so easy, don't you? I think you don't have to do it for very long. You don't have to run your own company for very long to sort of realize that, you know, these guys don't have it easy. Anyone who tries to do it and's got it easy, they're either very talented or they've got luck here, or they've got friends in the right places. And I think those three things, the vast majority of us don't have that. We have to work very hard to sort of achieve it. So I think you know, but you do look at yourself and think, you know, God, I could just get a job.
Why didn't you? You're a smart guy. You could have gotten paid much better than you were there were many years as an entrepreneur that you would have gotten paid better if you had a job somewhere. Why didn't you take a job? Why'd you stick with this?
Yeah. Well, just you know, stubbornness, isn't it? Stubbornness. Just refusal to accept defeat. You go into it. You invest so much of yourself into these projects, don't you? And it's just a stubborn refusal to accept defeat, really, ultimately. And that, you know, I've got that, and Martin's got that. And you know, that's why. As simple as that, really. Just, you know,
how did you and Martin connect?
Yeah. Well, he was a client of the X Digital Agency, so we'd worked together for some time, really.
And, so why did you two sit down and start thinking of new business ideas? How did that happen?
Yeah, well, I mean, he's got a lot of commercial expertise, Matt, and a lot of commercial experience, and we just got talking, and I talked to him about some of the business ideas that I'd had and that hadn't worked, and what I was working on at the time. One of the things I've not said so far, and it probably just fit in quite well here, is that one of the reasons that we didn't work out a lot of this stuff is because I've got no financial acumen, right? And I knew for ages before. I've known all my life, really. I haven't got that, but I knew it dawned on me quite early in the whole sort of business development process, trying all these ideas out, that I was making a mess of the finances, and I couldn't put the deals in place, and I was a pushover commercially. And I knew that I needed a finance, someone who could, I mean, finance guy sounds like an accountant. I don't mean that. I mean, somebody who can put the contracts in place, someone who can put the deals in place, basically. And that's what we call him in the company now, Matt. He's the deal maker, is Matt. And he's the guy who can go and build relationships and come up with deals that work for both parties and make money for both sides,
You told Jeremy, who pre-interviewed you, that you're such a pushover financially that you'll sometimes go out and spend too much money. Even if you don't have it, you'll put dinner on a credit card.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, run up some right debts, definitely.
Why? You know what? Here's why I do it. If I'm going to keep asking you to be open, I'll tell you why. I always seem to pay for everything, because I think there are times when I feel bad about having other people pay, and then there are other times when I feel like I get to this place, but I big time it. I'm like, oh, I'm a big shot. I've got to be paying. I've got to go for, give me the best bottle of drink that you have here. Put it on the table for everyone. Let's get every single dessert off the menu. Do you feel that way too? Is that where that comes from?
There's a little bit of that now, I suppose. But now we're sort of, you know, we can do it to a certain degree. You know, we don't have masses of cash, but we've got enough to treat everyone to a meal out every so often. So I quite enjoy that. But before, I knew for a fact that we didn't have it.
And so why did you spend?
Just it's just my mentality, and I just think, you know, sod it. I've worked hard all week. I'm gonna go and get smashed this weekend, or I'm gonna go to football, or I'm gonna go on a weekend away. We cater. I'm gonna go and take a train journey to Devon for the weekend or something. I just think sod it, really, and that's just my attitude to life, which is
a good thing. Correct me if I'm wrong. Here's what I'm understanding, and we've all done this. You feel like, I just worked from 6 in the morning till 2 in the morning. I got just a handful of hours of sleep this whole freaking week. I've earned a nice trip to somewhere for the weekend. I've earned a good drink with my friends without having to think about money. It's that kind of thing.
A little bit, yeah, a little bit. Well, I mean, yeah, it is that. I mean, I'm quite often and I still do it now. It's a nightmare. When you go on an holiday and you own your own company, you quite literally have to work through the night because to get that stuff done. And I've done it. I can remember 10 times when I've done it. I've literally not gone to sleep the night before I go to holiday, and then literally you finish work. After night, and you just get your car and go on your trip. And Katie hates it when I do it, but she's got to get the stuff done. And you've got to set up everything else for everyone to do while you're away. And you don't want to be pestered when you're away either. So you try and make sure you get as much done as possible before you go away, so you don't get pestered. And then you still get bloody pestered, don't you?
That's the worst. Yeah, you're right. The night before a trip, you're up all night working, so you get all your inbox cleared. You get everything done so that you can have the weekend away and not be distracted. And then someone will complain a few hours later, "Why didn't you respond to my email fast enough?" Go,
exactly. Exactly.
All right, I'm taking too slow. I'm going too slowly with this story. You and Martin hook up. You have these brainstorming sections thinking, where's a good business idea? Well, bah, 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 trying different ones. And then, boom, you hit on this idea of basically a search engine for parking spots. People come in. They search for a parking spot near the airport that they're going to. They get to see lots of options. When they pick an option to book it, you guys are on a commission for sending the lead to the parking lot, right? That's the basic idea.
Yeah.
So now that you have it, what's the first thing that you do to get this idea off the ground?
Well, you've got to get a website up, aren't you? First and foremost. We tried so many things. If anyone who's done software development, you've got these iterations that you go through, and we definitely did two clean builds of the website from scratch, and it was the third one that started taking orders, but it must have taken 7 or 8 months to get a website that was gonna actually convert orders. The first two versions and all the sort of sub iterations of those versions just couldn't get it to work at all. We could get traffic. We bought traffic. Martin put some of his own money into it. We just couldn't get it to convert.
Could you get the website launched easily because you're a guy who built so many websites?
Yeah, it was pretty. Because of the content management system that we had in house, it was relatively easy to put that live. And e-commerce side of things, which is obviously quite a complex part of web development. I'd done e-commerce since e-commerce existed online, so that was really simple. That was something that I could do very easily.
What did the website do in the beginning? I know it has more to it today, but the day you launched, what was it capable of? What were the features?
Do you know what? There's not really that much difference between what it can do now. Okay. What it does now, it does it very, very well. Before it's still you put your dates in, choose your airport, you search, choose your product, you pay for it. That's it.
I would put in my dates and I would say I need a car at Heathrow from this date, and then to that date when I return, you see a list of options. You click one to book it. You whip out your credit card. You essentially pay. You get your receipt. You're good to go. You're saying that's what it is today. That's what it was back then. But back then it broke a lot.
Yeah. We had a lot of problems with misplaced launches for want of a better.
What do you mean? What's a misplaced launch?
Just one that went wrong.
So I put in all my information. I book it. I go to the airport and they go, "Well, you don't have your spot here. I don't know who these travel parking group people are, but we didn't do anything with them." Yeah.
Well, we have had that, but that's not necessarily one of the bigger problems we had. It's more sort of the continuous iteration process, making changes to what we had, and it breaking something that previously worked, or the search not working properly, or the payment page not being secure, you've got your own website, the plethora of things that can go wrong with a website. It would just pretty much anything can go wrong with it, can't it? Yeah. And the slightest little thing can sort of bring your search capability down, or it can bring a page down, or it can make the CSS can quite easily be knocked over to one side, or the colors can be out. I mean, there's a million things what can go wrong, or the payment's not working. I mean, we've had that loads of times when when, you know, we finally got traffic working on the website, we finally got it converting, and then all of a sudden you come back after a week, and you come back in the morning, you leave at 5 for once in your life, and you come back in the morning and you realize that it's been offline all night. The payment system's been offline. And then you start bringing in stuff that's outside your control, which is all these different web services online. Any one of them can go down at any time, can't they? So you've got to try and mitigate against that. I mean, there's a million things that can go wrong with it all. And pretty much everything went wrong, you know, at one point in time. And it still does sometimes, but we've built systems and structures and balances in place now, checks and stuff that, you know, stuff don't go wrong very often now. In the start, it went wrong all the time. But the biggest problem was getting it to convert, at a cost per conversion in terms of my marketing cost. That meant that we made money, and if that's the sort of root of your question, that's what the biggest problem was. Not so much getting it to work; it was getting it to pay.
Technical problems like getting the shopping process to work, you can solve those. Keeping the website up, you can solve it, but not anyone can solve getting traffic at the right price, converting it at the right percentage point so that you can make more money on an order than you paid to get that order through the door. But you told Jeremy, too, that it took 3 versions and 8 months to get your first order?
Yeah, well, I think it was slightly less than that to get the first order. But I think we launched the first one in June 2010. We launched the first one in Jan 2010, and then it took its first order in the June, so 6 months later. But then it hardly took any orders. It only took a trickle of orders then between June and August. But then in August, we had a weekend in August when it suddenly took over 100 orders in a day, and we thought, right, well, it's working at last. I'm surprised we'd even carried on. We'd had that many arguments about it. You know, not working, the money that Martin had put in, the advertising money that we'd spent and that hadn't worked, the pay-per-click companies that, because we were driving all the traffic, most of the traffic we were driving for pay-per-click, the pay-per-click companies that we'd employed to try and solve the problem for us just hadn't done it. And it was Martin in the end that did the successful pay-per-click campaign, and he managed to sort of make it pay, really.
You went to pay-per-click companies and you said what, and then what did they do?
We said, send us traffic to our website
at a certain price.
Well, it wasn't so much that we said at a certain price. We gave them a budget to spend, which we probably wouldn't think. You know, thinking back, we probably wouldn't do it that way around now.
So Martin or you might have gone to a pay per click company. I'm looking at my notes here and said, "Here's £7,000. We want to try you out. Send us some traffic. Get it to us in a way that converts." You didn't say how much you wanted pay per click. You just said, "Get us the traffic." You got the traffic, it wouldn't convert, and you go, oh, what's wrong with us? But meanwhile, it was a problem with the pay-per-click company. They weren't sending you what you needed.
Yeah, well, that's right. And then also, we also bought other advertising on holiday websites that we thought were sort of a good target market, and they'd sent us traffic, but it didn't convert at all. It got the odd conversions, so we'd buy space on other people's websites. So not through Google. Some of it was through Google, but some of it was literally buying sort of, you know, banner space on people's websites that sent traffic.
And that didn't work.
Well, you know, we got a few orders, but, you know, it's only a trickle, and cost per order was sort of £1,000 or something.
So why don't you give up at that point? Here you are, a guy who's not afraid of trying new products. Why didn't you say, hey, you know what, Martin? I've tried lots of different products in the past. When they don't hit, they're just not going to hit. We've been working on this for a good 7-8 months here, 3 different versions. We gave it our all, but there's enough competition in this space. Pay-per-click is too hard. I think we need to think of another idea. Let's quietly shut this down. Let's you and I go out, have a beer, and brainstorm a new idea. Why didn't you take that kind of direction, which would have made sense?
Well, you know, I mean, I probably, as I recall, I wanted to do that.
You did.
I think so. Yeah, I think I was pretty much by that time. I put that much time and effort into these auxiliary projects, as it were, and none of them had worked out. I was sort of ready at that point. I think I'd done 6 years at that point with Digital Agency. The Digital Agency was faltering because I put all my time into setting these projects up rather than sort of doing the core work, which paid the bills. And it was Martin really that had that initial drive to continue. He wouldn't accept that it wasn't going to convert. And then he made it convert. And he was constantly saying, "You've got to improve this part of the site. You've got to improve this part of the site." So we continually iterated the site. We continually improved the design of the site. We got better designers involved. We got Dan involved, as I said, who wasn't involved in the original designs, even though I worked with him on a day-to-day basis. And he's the guy now who's doing all the design still for us. He's full-time with the company, sort of very key member of the team. Got him involved to do a much better design for the site, and just carried on, really.
Let me see if I understand this. You're saying, yeah, you carry on because there's some inertia to any project, that it's harder to stop than it is to continue. But also, Martin kept you going by encouraging you because he believed that there was some way to make this conversion work. He then sits down and says, "I'm going to buy ads for us on a pay-per-click basis. We don't need an agency. I'm going to make the deals. I'll get it." He buys the traffic, and then he comes back to you and says, "No, buddy, I don't think we're converting well because there's this obstacle. Please get rid of it." What are some of those obstacles in the funnel? Some of those areas that you needed to smooth out? Do you remember one of the early ones?
Yeah, I mean, it's just a process, isn't it, that the user's got and the confidence side of things. And he had a background, very commercial background that relied on sort of consumer confidence. So I mean, he was very big on that, and certainly the old trust side of things. Obviously, I had a lot of e-commerce experience as well in terms of the things. My e-commerce experience, I'd never made a site that took the level of cash that we were looking to take. It was all sort of very small time stuff, very niche purchases that people were going to purchase anyway for sort of your small time companies. Like I said, your guys on your high street, just your sort of the companies that are maybe only doing sort of 50, 60 grand turnover a year, just your one man bands. But I might have had experience of much bigger operations. And he was able to really guide that side of things.
Can you give me an example of something that he said, "Hey, this is what you need to do. You're not as experienced as I am. I'm buying the ads, and I can sense that we need to do something." I want to get an understanding of what he contributed here.
Yeah, there's a lot. Well, I mean, the information. In fact, the best one is the products. He went and got all the product deals, and ultimately we're a comparison website for airport parking products. So the more products that we had on there, and we made our logo and our sort of mission to start with, sort of, "We'll find you the best deal." So the more and more products we got on there, more and more, which he did all the deals for, the more and more we were sort of forced to improve the product layout and the user interaction with the product pages after you've done your search. And then obviously it becomes more of a website that people actually want to use and interact with and buy their actual products on ultimately. And I think gradually we got such an array of information on there. It became a website that people were prepared to place orders on.
Okay. So you get more offers. If I go and do a search for parking near Heathrow and all I see is one parking lot, I go, "These guys are basically shills for this lot." But if I see a ton of them, then I think, "Oh, this is the place for me to really compare them all and get the cheapest one that has the best amenities." Gives me more confidence.
Or not so much even the cheapest one. I mean, we sell a lot of premium products as well. It's the best for what they're wanting. So some people are after cheap, some people are after quality. So it's the range.
Okay, so he gets more. What else does he suggest that you do on the site that's different because of his experience and his buying?
Yeah, well, I mean, I suppose at that point it becomes when we started taking orders, it becomes a collaborative effort then between everyone involved. Okay. And all of a sudden we were taking orders, and we both had full-time jobs. Remember me and Matt at that point in time. All of a sudden we were taking orders, and we were like, "Well, God, what we're going to, what we're going to do?" Because with orders come customer service queries, don't they? And people wanting to ring up and query about the products. People wanting to make amendments to their orders. People wanting to complain about the service levels that they sometimes get. We've had some nightmare stories about the actual some of the products that, I mean, I've said that we've got a load of good products on, and the products we've got on now are really very good. But some of the guys we had on initially, some of the car parts we were selling originally.
Tell the audience about 6 weeks in, you guys work with a rogue car parker. And do you remember what happened? Do you know the one I'm talking about?
Oh, Gary Cranley. Yeah, I remember it well. Yeah. He was a... Well, we were taking a Gatwick. I mean, everyone knows the airports, Gatwick and Heathrow, right? They're the two biggest ones in the UK. We were taking loads of orders at Gatwick. And we thought, well, we should be taking as many at Heathrow. So we took a car park on at Heathrow. And it was fine. There's a lot of orders there. And then in fact, this is a story where it was after this when we realised that we've got to go full time, because what happened was we got a phone call, Martin got the phone call on a weekend from a customer saying, my car's not being returned, what's going on? And then we started to get more phone calls from customers saying, my car's not being returned.
People who parked their car with you said, my car isn't being returned. I never got it back.
That's right.
This is the chauffeur service where someone comes to the airport.
No, this is the booking agent one. This is the booking for parking. So we'd placed a booking on behalf of another car park.
Okay.
And then they're ringing us because they're there on a contact point other than that car park. And fair enough. I mean, that's one of the services that we provide. Sort of the old communication between customer and car park. That's one of the reasons why people use our service. Why they use our website. Anyway, it turned out that this fella had been, well, obviously the police got involved at this point because a lot of people who've effectively had the cars nicked, they've had the cars stolen.
Essentially stolen, right. They park it somewhere and they come back, there's no car.
That's right.
Because this guy does what?
It turned out that he'd been nicked. He'd been arrested, for indecent exposure, and he when he was meant to be returning these cars, he was actually in prison.
So that's why he was just parking these cars, as I understand it too, along the streets of London.
That's right. Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously London's a big place, but near his, it's streets. So he wasn't parking in central London, but he was parking in a suburb of London on his outside his house. We're not talking about 10 cars. We're talking about 100 cars.
100 cars just parked out there in the street instead of the lots that people paid for, and he's not bringing them back to the lots before they come back to the airport because he is in jail for exposure.
That's right. Yeah.
And that's when you learned, hey, we've got to really start to do some research on the people who we partner up with. It's not enough that they want to partner with us. We need to make sure that they're legitimate people.
Well, and since then we've vetted every car park that we sell. Yeah, I mean, we make sure that all due diligence is done now, which it was a nightmare on that. It was a nightmare. But we've had all sorts of dodgy car parks. We had a guy who parked in McDonald's, which was a bit of a shocker as well. I mean, the only way we found out about that was because all the cars that he was parking in McDonald's, they were getting parking tickets. So we only found out about that because the parking tickets started coming back to the customers, and also they'd ring up us up and say, "Well, where's my car being parked?" And we were like, "Well, it's been parked with an ex vendor who we're a booking agent for." Looked into it and it was parking in McDonald's. Nightmare. They'll try anything. But these are the problems that we've solved now. I mean, it's we've really taken a lot of steps forward in that respect. And luckily, parking's very stable in terms of the car packs that we offer now, you have to come to us with a good proposal and a good track record to get on the website now, and the guys who are on there and doing a good job, they get a lot of orders from us. So that's turned around. But it was definitely after the Cranley incident that we thought, God, we're going to have to tighten things up here. And that was when it became a much more collaborative process. Really, we had to get more people involved. And we realized that it wasn't possible for it to be done just with me and Martin.
That's when you decided to bring more people in, you're saying?
That's right, yeah.
Okay. What about, I mean, these are war stories that you can look back on with pride and say, hey, we got through them. These are the kinds of stories that for most people, one or two experiences like that would make them go, I'm done with this. I got to go get a job or do something simpler. You stuck with it. I want to hear about one of the highs along the way so that this doesn't come across as one of these depressing interviews for a guy who just kept getting slammed by life in his business. Do you remember maybe the...
It's not coming across like that, though, is it? Hopefully.
I don't think it is. And I think one thing we could do is talk about maybe the first million in sales. Do you remember the first time you looked at your accounting software and saw, look at that, we're now a million in sales?
Do you know what? I don't remember that, but it's and this is a question that Jeremy, when I spoke to him before, and he asked me this, and it's more, it's and we don't, we've never celebrated, but you know, it's more that sort of fantastic glow that you get inside when you know that it's working, and you think, you know, you sit back with Martin or with Phil, who's my brother as well, actually, and he was our first employee, or somebody else who we've worked with for a long time, like Dan or like Curtis, another one of the developers, you sit back and you just think, well, you know, this is actually working now. But I'm tapping my foot now. I'm sort of nervous thinking about it. I just, you know, it's not enough, really. And I know that I should calm down a little bit. And we talk about it all the time. We want to consolidate and try and make sure that what we keep what we've got. And obviously very important to us is to improve the profitability, which is a fantastic. We've got a lot of areas we can improve on and increase profitability.
I said, actually, before we get to the wife, one other thing I want to ask about. There is this new part of the business where you send chauffeurs to the airport to pick people up. Where did this idea come from?
Yeah, so that's obviously a critical part to it, really. What happened with that was that we sell every UK airport through Looking for Parking, which is a price, you know, the consolidator website where we compare all the prices. We sell at every UK airport. But we couldn't find good products. And by good products, I mean a product that's got good commission for us that we can sell quite a lot of, that's a service that people want to use. And we couldn't find good products at certain airports. We made a little bit in turnover. We got a bit of money in back from Looking for Parking. And so we thought, well, why don't we? Where we can't find a good car park, why don't we set our own up? And you know, I wish we'd never done it, because the problems because that's where the company's really grown. I mean, obviously, I'm saying that tongue in cheek, you know, because you know, I love it, and we.
What percentage of your business comes from the chauffeur?
It's about 50-50.
50?
It's about 50-50.
50-50. Okay, yeah, so you said we can't find enough places, or people have to drive around to look for these lots. We can come up with a better way.
That's right, yeah. Well, there are obviously it's called Meet and Greet. There's just the chauffeur parking. It's called valet parking in America, I think. Yeah, and we could. I mean, there's lots of companies that do it, but there's not. You know, we felt as though we could. We felt as though we could do it. So we opened one at Birmingham Airport, and Martin did one of his deals with Birmingham with the actual management team at Birmingham Airport for us to have a license there to operate a meet and greet company, and we got other agents like ourselves to sell for us, so we have multiple agents selling for us, and that worked, and we employ all our own drivers, and then we thought, well, that's worked, let's do another one. So we did East Midlands. Which is only a very small airport that works. So we thought, well, let's do Heathrow. So we did Heathrow, and that one's been, we tried to get that working 4 or 5 times now, and it operates fine, but we can't quite make any money on that. Which is sort of something that we're working on an ongoing basis. But then we did Luton, which is a similar size operation to Birmingham. So all of a sudden we had this meet and greet parking company, and of course the benefit to that is of course that we are the agent and we are the car park, so we're not splitting the rev of anybody. But of course the problem with having my background's websites, right? And so I can do that very easily. What I don't have any experience in is operational companies and human resources. And you know, the level of accountancy expertise that you need to manage a company with sort of 60, 70, 80 drivers employed, which has been a massive challenge, really, for everybody involved. And it still is. It absolutely still is. We're far from being sort of home and dry in terms of in terms of our capability to manage that size of an operation. Now, but we know what we need to do though.
What's that?
Yeah, we've still got a lot of ongoing problems with the meet and greet service. We're going to pack 100,000 cars this year through that service, and then we're going to do another 200,000. It'd be more than that through looking for parking. But so we've got the model there. The model definitely works, and it can definitely be profitable. But we've got sort of efficiency and staffing and training issues really that are ongoing that we need to resolve.
Are all the parking options that are listed on your site, I'm on now, stressfreeairportparking.com, are all of them chauffeur-based?
On Stressfree Parking, yeah, on that one they are, yeah.
Oh, but on the others, you also have an option for me to search for a parking spot that I can drive my car to and park and leave it there.
That's right.
Gotcha, okay. All right, let's see, is there anything else here along the way? You guys do... Here are the stats that I have. You guys now are responsible for 350,000 cars parked every year. You're in 32 airports.
Yeah.
Conversion rate on the website, you guys have increased it to 12%. That means more than 1 in 10 people who land on the site end up actually booking with you guys.
That's pretty much right.
And of course, along with all those cars that you guys handle, 500 calls come in every day from people who want to know about the service, complain, compliment, etc.
In the summer,
okay. And there's 80 people who you guys employ.
Yeah, in the winter, it's not. As an average, you know, we'd be about sort of 350 calls a day. It's a lot to deal with, but you know, it's good fun.
I've stretched this out for too long. I was shocked by it. Maybe most people won't be. But what happened there?
We're working so hard. Me and Martin are very focused. We'd taken it so far. We brought it so far. We just moved to an office of our own. We had a new version. I can't remember if it was the fourth or the fifth version of the website that was a complete rebuild in terms of sort of its not in terms of its functionality, not in terms of its base model, but in terms of how it was all managed from behind. Because you've got to remember, there's obviously the front facing website, but there's also a whole API behind it, so other people can book our products. There's a travel agent login so that travel agents can book our products. We've got a white labeling system so that other people can build their own system using our products. So there's a whole transaction management system in there as well, and there's a driver management module as well, which was
way more complicated on the inside than it seems when I look at it on the outside. On the outside, I feel like, oh, such a simple search engine, such a simple business. These guys must be raking it in without much work. And you're saying, no, look at all this stuff that goes in. And as a result, what kind of hours were you putting in?
Oh God, it was a nightmare. A lot, mate. It makes me cringe to think about it. And I still do it, to be honest. I do it less now. I've got two kids now. So, it's unsustainable. It's unsustainable. And having problems, not really respecting Katie as my wife and her sort of, you know, requirements in life. And that led to us being apart for quite some time, really, because I wanted to focus and complete the website, and we just had a little girl, Lottie. It was amazing. So took the decision really to Katie went to live with her parents in London for 6 months, whilst I stayed in Leeds, which is up north in England, to work on the site to get it ready. Was that the right thing to do? God, no, who knows? But it was definitely hard to be apart from a
6 months she was with her family, you were working on the business, and then how did you know that the period was over, that it's time for you guys to get back together?
Good question. I can't really remember. There comes a time, doesn't there? There comes a time when you think, well, you know, I'm ready to, you know, I think we've taken it as far as this phase has gone as far as it can go. I want to be back with you and my little girl. There's no way that we can move to London because the business is in Leeds. So it's a hard thing for, for her as well. Yeah, it didn't, and that's how that panned out. But to be honest, it's an ongoing theme, really.
I bet, because you know we all have to deal with it. Today I'm going to be recording with you. Then about 20 minutes after we're done, I'm going to record with someone else. Then a few hours after that, I'll record with one other person from 7 o'clock till 9 o'clock. That person's on the East Coast, which means he's starting at 10 o'clock, that entrepreneur, and going till 11 midnight at his time. We're all facing this issue. What have you learned? What can you teach us?
Don't do it.
Don't do it.
Yeah. No. Well, you've got to somehow find that balance, and it's just a question of constant trial and error. I haven't found that balance yet. I won't find it. I don't think until we've got to a threshold where we feel as though the company's running off its own back and it doesn't need our constant attention. And you're going to say to that. Well, you know, how are you gonna know when that is? And the answer is, I don't know when that's gonna be. We're definitely closer than we were a year ago, and a year from now we'll be much closer again.
This sounds ridiculous, but I did a series of interviews and courses on how to systemize. It helped me tremendously. Like before, I used to think I was the only person who could do a pre-interview or research a guest. You were pre-interviewed by Jeremy. He did maybe even a better job than I did. Not maybe. I think he did a better job than I would have done. The research that I have here in front. All right, so we lost the connection there for a moment. But what I was saying was, for me, it was systemizing and then giving those systems to other people to run and improve on. What about for you? You're saying that you've improved over the last year and you continue to improve. Was there one thing like systems that helped you?
I mean, I'm big on systems anyway. I love, you know, my whole sort of life is, I'm a coder. My whole life is based on that. So I don't think I could identify a particular thing, but it's just in answer to your question, you know, it's just finding that bit of reality and realizing that, you know, it's not all about work. It can't be. But that's come with a little bit of success. So to be honest, Andrew, you know, that's you know, the fact that this is working now, and we're getting paid from it, and it's not masses, but it's more than we were getting paid before. Or certainly me anyway. Martin, no, because he's had much more sort of success in his career, and he's not up to the level where he was before. But I'm higher than the level that I was before. So having achieved that has allowed me to sort of get a bit more of a sense of reality about what I need to be doing, and part of that's spending time with Katie and kids, isn't it?
Having money does make it easier to take some time off and to balance your life.
Yeah, well, that's good. It's good. I'm glad you agree. But the thing is, you get yourself in a bit of a. It's not a rut's the wrong word. You get yourself in a bit of a situation, don't you, whereby success being success, doesn't it? And you know that you've got to continually keep working on it. Otherwise, the work that you've done in the past is going to fall from underneath you, potentially. Yeah. And that's the fear that you've got. And I'm sure you've got the same. I mean, you've got this incredible successful website. But if you suddenly stopped working on it, you know, how long would it be before all the work that you've done and it would be undone? Exactly. It's an impossible question to answer, isn't it? I mean, it may be a 100-year legacy that you're leaving behind with all these interviews, and I generally hope that it is. But it may be that if you stop doing it for 6 months, it'd be completely gone. And that's what I'm sort of thinking about this. I'm thinking if I don't carry on forcing it forwards and don't carry on driving it forwards and finding ways to improve it, finding ways to protect what I've done so far, then you know, it could all go from under me. And am I scared of that? Is that cowardice really to think that? And I mean, is it a lack of confidence in my own ability to try and sort of succeed and make it work? Maybe. I don't know.
You tell me. Ask you,
I actually found in my own life, my own business, that when I lose that fear that it's all going to go away, when I get too complacent, then things start to take a dive. Back at Bradford and Reed, when I thought, well, I got it, everything's good. I remember even my CFO coming to me and saying, hey, you know what? Our sales are down this month. And I thought, so down from what? Look at the height that we're on. A little down is fine. I don't know why this guy's worrying. I should have worried with him right there. I should have freaked out. Even a little bit down should have been enough for me to say, this thing could go away unless I focus really deeply on it.
Yeah.
And then, of course, because I didn't, then I think sales continued to suffer and I wasn't paying attention to which of my customers was maybe going out of business, which meant that they couldn't pay necessarily. It was, you got to focus. You got to just be, I hate to say it, but paranoid. Because I don't want to live my life paranoid.
Exactly. And that brings its own stresses, doesn't it? That paranoia, and constantly having to check things. I mean, I check it. You know, Martin does the same back to me, and I try and instill that principle into all the guys who are our managers now. You've got to check this. You've got to check it. You've got to make sure that it's done. You've got to put a system in place to ensure that there's a double check after you've checked it, or that someone else can check it. And that's the only way to and I hasten to add that you know. Quite often things still don't get checked properly. And that's the way that we do it. There's so much to do.
And before I ask you the final question, I just noticed now when I searched my inbox for your name, you just bought a Mixergy Premium membership, the big one. So first of all, thank you for being a Mixergy Premium member. And at this point, I usually ask people, I usually tell people about the membership. Well, instead of me telling them, I got to ask you, you've watched Mixergy interviews before, you now got a membership. What's the value that you're finding in Mixergy?
Yeah, well, I mean, when I first came across the website, I was surprised when I was contacted actually to go on it, because I thought it was very, very, obviously it's very American focused. I've not seen another interview. I mean, I've watched a fair few on there, but time constraints means that I'd love to watch them all. And sometimes you don't watch the full interview. Sometimes you just flit and trip between it, because some of them are quite long. But I mean, it's a fantastic resource, isn't it? It's amazing sort of, particularly in this age of this revolution that we're all part of with the internet. And there's so many opportunities for people like ourselves to have an idea and drive it forward and be creative. I just think it's an incredible resource, and it's a timeline for business creation in the modern age.
Well, thank you for contributing to it by telling your story and helping people hear how you built it up. If anyone else wants to join Mixergy Premium, I'll just quickly say it's at mixergypremium.com. And if you join, and when you join, I should say, you get almost 100 courses taught by entrepreneurs who turn on their computer screen or walk you through the process of how they do what they do well. And almost 800 interviews with entrepreneurs who break down the stories of how they built up their businesses and share the ups and the downs with you. And it's all on mixergypremium.com. And my last question for you before we go is, we've talked about the struggles here on your way to building this successful company. And I know in your mind, it's going to be even more.
Almost successful.
It's weird how we do that. I still think... Not really successful. When people say that Mixergy is going well, I go, no, it's not. I could be doing so much better. Was it at this point, looking back on all this work, on all the different business ideas that you tried, on all the frustrations with people who took cars and parked them in the street, and then you had to go hunt them down? With all of that, was it worth it?
Oh yeah, definitely worth it. Would I do it if you're asking me? Well, it's the most creative, building a company is, and I've discussed this with Katie all the time, building a company is the most creative thing you could ever do. And in terms of your own personal development, in terms of your own self-learning, in terms of your moral fiber, and it forces you to question your personality and what you think about all different aspects of the social spectrum, of politics, of negotiation, of the consumer world. It forces you to think about all this stuff. Would I do it again? It's a different question. Would I do it again? No.
Why?
Just because it takes a lot out of you. It takes a lot out of you. It's because I've done it. It's worth it. But if I knew what it was going to do, then I wouldn't. But of course, you don't know that, do you?
No.
Yeah. But it's great. I mean, I don't want to, you know, if you've got it in you, it's best, it's the best. If you've got it in you, it's the best thing you could do in your life.
Yeah. It is really incredibly creative. And I have a feeling that when we talk a few years from now, when this thing goes even bigger and I ask you about whether it was worth it and if you knew all the pain going into it, would you do it? You'd look at that point in your life and you'd say, absolutely, because I can see the possibilities in this business. And I'm grateful to you for sharing your story. And if the audience wants to reach out to you and say thank you directly, what's a good way for them to do it?
Yeah, I mean, just my email. It's fine. Just put my email on the video. It's fine. Dave at travelparkinggroup.com.
I'll read it again for the transcribers. It's dave@travelparkinggroup.com. And I always urge the audience, if they got anything value out of this, even if they listened all this way to the end, and I know that they got a lot of value out of it, find a way to say thank you. And Dave, thank you for including your email here so people can do it. And I'll do it now. Thank you.
Cheers, Andrew. Thank you very much, mate.
Cheers, and have a good evening.
You too. Well, I'm off to bed now.
Good night. Thank you all for being a part of it. Bye, guys.